handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, and at SteveBeck.com, if you're listening that way, whatever way you're listening. Good morning. this may be a, Casey, I should have written you this heads up. We've got a crew coming today. It's been a very busy week with me being home. And yesterday, I didn't tell you this. Tina slipped in as we're driving home after she picked me up Sunday, coming back from Remington. And very matter-of-factly, she slipped in. She said, "Oh," she said, "your windshield." I said, "My windshield? Yeah, there's a crack. There's a crack. You're going to have to get it fixed." I said, how did that happen? I don't know. Did you drive my car? I started it, you know. So I can go look at it on Monday. there's a crack from the dashboard, like three quarters of the way across the windshield. She made it sound like, oh, an acorn fell out of a tree and chipped the windshield. No. Then it's so great. We use Esurance, and I got to tell you, anytime I've had to deal with them, it's an Allstate company. Anytime I've had to do it right on the phone, boom. I've never had to pick up a phone, everything. They're terrific. They have the glass replacement system. And the best part of it was, is the windshield crack longer than 6 inches? Yes. Yes, it is. So, the best part, you put the thing in. Do you want to bring it to a guy? Do you want them to come to you? They came. I looked up at some point yesterday, and I see the guy's in the driveway. He never didn't even knock on the door. He just... But a boom. So anyway, so there was that. But today I'm waiting. We're between 8:30 and 9:30. We're supposed to have had we're having a new door. Tina finally wore me down. And I've been living here 20 years, and the front door, which takes a beating from the sun, but it swells and it hot, cold, sun, winter, and it's just a mess. I mean, the cold air comes pouring through the door is literally, there's a chance that this door is 100 years old. I'm not kidding. It wasn't, when they came to measure, they said this is not a size that exists anymore. So anyway, so there's a chance, Casey, that much like the famed moment on Tony Kornheiser's radio show when the famous Castro convertible delivery, there's a few of you. I bet you Smoking Joe McKay. I bet you Joe remembers this. It's one of the great gags and running jokes that I remember from those days. I don't know if these guys are just going to, I left the doors open, so maybe they'll come and get started. And when we take our first break, I'll go down and greet them. But there's going to be, at some point, there's going to be guys basically dismantling the threshold here. It's it might be appropriate for me to go down and say hello, So we'll see about that. FYI, I wanted to get that out there. Out there last night at about 7 o'clock, the opportunity to start perusing the opening day PPs. Boxing Day, boy, what a Boxing Day we're going to be treated to. We're on vacation. I'm sorry, but this is a tradition like no other, much like the Masters, taking off between Christmas and New Year's, and also that week or so you know, before July 4th, the end of June, the end of Triple Crown season. Those are our traditional times off. So we can refresh and reboot and come back ready for 2023. In the meantime, while we're going to be away, we're certainly going to be playing, and we do have, I don't know what the, I know Spencer's coming, I think tomorrow, actually, and leaving on, I think he goes back, I guess, Monday, I don't know. Anyway, we got the babies coming and the whole bit. So I'm planning the dining, you know, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, you know, subsequent. You got to plan like 5 or 6 meals. It's actually makes Thanksgiving look like a breeze. Actually, not thinking about it, but I already gave you the good advice on the ham. The New York Times yesterday. In fact, I got to go back to this. I didn't print it. They had a root beer. We were talking Dr. Pepper or Coca-Cola glaze for the ham. They've got a root beer one. And I, as it happens, I've got 3 bottles of Spreckler. You ever Spreckler? Very good. Very, very good root beer. So I might do a root beer glaze. Yeah. All right. meantime, all right, let's at least get the top line in here. We got some Clancy's. I think we got at least one Clancy. I don't know if we're going to have both Clancy's. I know we got Joe. Right now he's out in the woods walking the dog. Yeah. Meanwhile, the wee Clancy says he's really busy today. And that could mean, it could mean the Christmas tree run. But I guarantee you we are not going to leave the 22 season behind without a visit from the wee Clancy. And the annual telling of the runaway Christmas tree. it's a family favorite. Another family favorite, opening day at Santa Anita. And the fields came together. I think they were working the phones, Chris and the racing office, and they put together a terrific opening day card, as anticipated, and all of the annual favorites, starting with the Malibu and the La Brea, but also the Mathis Brothers Mile, right? And you got some nice maiden action. Both the turf and dirt, the San Antonio and the San Gabriel, outstanding. And you know, when it comes to the, start with the La Brea. Actually, start with the Malibu because that's the page that seemed to open up first. The American Oaks too. Don't forget the, yeah, you know, the field obviously starts with Taba, and you know, from there you try to figure out, you know, who might be able to offer, you know, some resistance. And Forbidden Kingdom draws the rail for Mandela, my racehorse and Spendthrift, and, you know, clearly is going to have to light out. There is a lot of speed in here, and really scattered throughout the gate. Forbidden Kingdom down inside. Apprehend, that fast Peter Miller. The Airgate for Mr. Redicop. He'll show speed. He's got route speed. So, but he also, you know, he also attended the pace when he was sprinting. So this is a very dangerous cutback. I mean, if there's a horse that jumps out as a potential upsetter of Taba in here, the first one you're going to think about is Apprehend, because he had that huge allowance win when stretching out to a mile. So Apprehend, very interesting. Ramon Vasquez has ridden him the last pair, and he and Peter Miller have done nice work. Vasquez, in fact, the other day, was that yesterday? Yep, it's been yesterday. I I made a little, I just noticed something. In fact, where is it now that I brought it up? David Hill later, by the way, as we make our way toward a kind of a funny, it's a funny NFL weekend. But I did notice yesterday after the show, and I highlighted it. Maybe it's here? Nope, unbelievable. It's not easy. The very notable emergence, let's call it, or if you don't want to call it an emergence, just you can say the increasing presence on your radar of a handful of emergent jockeys. And it to me, it was pretty notable. In fact, I want to go back. I wish I could find it now. I hate my, I've got so much on this stupid desk. Here, hold on. We'll go right to the, because I know it's here. When I put up the, oh, and by the way, speaking of, I was saying, when I put up the buyers the other day, I printed it out, and the good news is, thanks to, and I was very close to getting disgusted with a small orange, which is the company that for 15 years, whatever it is, 20 years, it's hosted Derby Trail. And there's been moments when they've botched things up. And it seemed like that's what we were dealing with. Derby Trail is back operating 100%. So I got to tell you, I thought the shelf life, like that progressive commercial with the ants, expired. I thought the shelf life had expired on the website. At some point, it's going to happen because my web dev guy who was my neighbor, he left the business, and so Derby Trail is a bit of a ghost ship. There's some things I can't really fix anymore. But the message board is the key, and the front page, and those two things, limp along. So we live to fight another day on Derby Trail. But the point was, the clear emergence of Ramon Vasquez, who of course has been kind of hinting at the next level for the last couple of years. And then Christian Torres, who has absolutely dominated the first couple of weekends down at Oaklawn, and of course is coming off of a riding title at Remington. So there's Torres, and then at Turfway, Gerardo Corrales, who is clearly ready for prime time, and he may, because of his affiliation with a couple of very prominent barns, he may just stick out what he's doing. I mean, there's certainly nothing wrong with poaching these nice purses at Turfway, but those three to me are an emergent story, and by all rights, you could probably fold in Juan Hernandez as well. He's worked his way into the Baffert barn, and it's refreshing, to be honest, to see some regular new faces. And then, of course, there's the whole Youngblood storyline, which frankly revolves around this group of female bugs that are making noise. So I don't know. That just was a little storyline that popped in my head. Anyway, Juan Hernandez on Forbidden Kingdom and Ramon Vasquez on Apprehend. Two invaders, most notably Nakatomi. And what a perfect time. What a perfect time to bring up the fact that, it was on last night, Die Hard, and it is a Christmas movie, for those that aren't sure. But Nakatomi makes his way out west for Wesley. We should mention Messier. you know, is coming off of the bleeding incident at Keeneland, has had a series of solid works, including a bullet 5/8, 59 flat from the gate for Baffert. But and he is he's never been out of the exacta at Santa Anita. He's got that going for him. Second in the Santa Anita Derby, the Bob Lewis win, and the maiden breaker. So I mean, he's typically run better at Santa Anita, really, than anywhere else, frankly. And that includes at Los Al, where he's had a pair of seconds. And maybe the long stretch has something to do with that. Interesting, actually, that that's the case. But his two trips to Kentucky were, I mean, the Derby, you know, what are you going to say about the Derby? But, you know, the bleeding incident at Keeneland, trying to prep for this, but instead of that, as a prep, he's been given a steady diet since November 28th. Four works, half mile, 5/8, 5/8, and then a half mile. And sharp, and you can see all those on XBTV. So Messier with Johnny back aboard. Johnny out, of course, to ride. And the other half of the field, hoist the gold, the other invader, Dallas Stewart. This is Dream Team One Racing, homebred of theirs, the mineshaft that's nibbled at Stakes Company sprinting, including a second to Gunite in the Perryville, going back to October. Then went to Mahoning Valley and was kind of running late, but arrived a little too late on the scene. Hoist the gold, gets Joel. Certainly no, for a horse from off the pace, 7/8, Joel Rosario, not a bad asset. Then Taba and Smith coming off the distant third behind Flight Line. And, of course, just missing second with Olympiad in the Classic. But here's a turn back, of course. The last time, it's interesting. Last time Taba sprinted was his debut. He immediately went, you know, obviously, force-fed just because of his late start getting his career going. Was kind of force-fed, and the win in the Santa Anita Derby, which then sort of forced Amer Zidane's hand to and Baffert's hand to go running in the Kentucky Derby. So, you know, followed that up with that good second to Cyberknife in the Haskell, the win in the Pennsylvania Derby, and the third in the Classic. So Taba, who, you know, I don't think he's certainly not going to be the three-year-old champion, but he certainly can get some placement votes. Perfect Flight, Peter Miller's other horse for Gary Barber. And Perfect Flight coming out of the Zia Park Derby win a month ago, turning back. So a couple of turn back opportunities here. Strava, Dallas's other invader. Flavian Pratt gets aboard. Santana's riding back for Peter Miller in on Perfect Flight. Strava, the Into Mischief, Sienna, Windstar, and Partners Company, coming off of an allowance win at Churchill in the Slop. That was a mile. So, you know, the one-turn configuration, the extended sprint, kind of fits. This is for Dallas. And 98, career best buyer out of that. I'll be interested to see what the thoroughgraphs look like, maybe tonight or tomorrow night. And Straight No Chaser, Dan Blacker's Spitester Colt from My Racehorse, coming off the allowance win at Santa Anita in October. So there's the field of nine for the last grade one on the dirt for males. The always engaging Malibu. It's going to go as the 10th race, 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific. The other, I suppose we should slip in the La Brea. The La Brea drew together a field of eight, including Rudy Rodriguez sending Hot Peppers east. The rest of that field locals, including a phalanx of Baffert runners that go after the grade one. Doug O'Neill from the outside, actually. Let's start with the open air outside box in this case, coming out of the distaff, which did not go particularly well. So turn back for a wake at midnight. Not necessarily a bad spot out there. And awake at midnight, the Nyquist for Mr. Redham has also done nicely at Santa Anita. Kirsten Bosch, John Sadler for Keith Abrams, homebred of his, Midnight Loot. Turning back from the Zia Oaks, Fun to Dream for Baffert. Won the Betty Grable. It's a cowbred that Baffert co-bred with Connie Pagler. Fun to Dream, an Airgate filly. And D'Amato with Ain't Easy. Deep waters here. But you'll recall that she won the Chandelier last year. And honestly, her whole three-year-old season has been a bit of a, you know, a bit of a challenge. Just has really, never got rolling. Santa Isabel, and then kind of went sideways from there. Has been beaten, you know, open lengths, essentially. A couple of, you know, three placements on the year, but just really things did not ever gel for Ain't Easy as a three-year-old. So maybe she can salvage something. Midnight Memories for Baffert from the four hole with Ramon Vasquez. Rosario signs on, and Rosario did break Ain't Easy's maiden and won the Chandelier with her. So Rosario reunited with Ain't Easy. Midnight Memories for Baffert. This is Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman, the Mastery filly, and she's been, you know, she's been very solid and basically wrapped up the middle part of the year with the Zenyatta and Torrey Pines wins, and you know, then kind of was put away and started to gear back up in November for this spot. Has had a long series, including some 6 furlong, 7/8, and I mean, old school drills getting ready for this. My God. 5/8, November 18th, 6 furlongs. And of course, when Baffert runs them, you know, printed out on your PPs, 6 furlongs and 7 furlongs, they actually worked a mile and a 1/16 because the rider keeps going. Vasquez aboard, was aboard for the two graded stake wins. Midnight Memories, obviously going to be your logical centerpiece in here. Ganadora for Baffert and the Chews, Bioma. This was the million-dollar quality road, who's kind of had a 3 for 4 on the year, but has been kind of, you know, kept, other than trying the Summertime Oaks, you know, feels like a sprinty type, actually. And getting back to this, the 7/8, it'll be very interesting to see how Ganadora, what John makes Ganadora on his morning line. Hot Peppers, as mentioned, Rudy Rodriguez sending that one out. Johnny is on Ganadora, by the way, first time for him. Hot Peppers, the Kozan filly for Rudy Rod, our friend Mike Caruso, former Bethlehem Stables, now operating under Mike's name. This was a very modest purchase that has done very nicely, including the victory ride win last seen at Saratoga, closing weekend in the Prior S, fourth to Wicked Halo and the likes. Tyler Gaffleone named, and Flavian Pratt rides for Baffert on Under the Stars, second recently to CC in the Chili. That came October 2nd and then got freshened for this and has had a strong string of work. So two terrific final three-year-old grade ones on the year, part of this always exciting opening day at the Great Race Place. Beside that, the American Oaks, field of 11 out here for the nightcap, putting it on as the nightcap. And Mark Glatt, who, of course, we talked to about the red carpet win, Bell Street Bridie, who very well may be, very well, you know, the, early on the card, in the opener, actually, in the Mathis Brothers Mile, you've got Balnikov coming back off the Bryan Station win and Keeneland. And Bell Street Bridie feels a little bit, you know, kind of like the female version of Balnikov, right? I think that's a fair equivalency. You've also got that mise-en-scene, Brendan Walsh for Qatar Racing and Partners. How about Chad sending Salima, the El Kabir, Irish bred, coming off the Winter Memories win. Michael W. McCarthy for the Backrack and Partner. Star-Spangled Banner Filly, Duvet Day. Phil D'Amato, well represented here. Phil's got, I think, does he have four in here or three? I think he's got, I know he's got at least three. Yeah, three. he's got Raya Moon, he's got Oakhurst, and then he's got School Dance as well. Skims for Shug coming out of the Sands Point win. It's, this will be a lot of fun. Lady Clementine for George Papa Padromo. Off an allowance success. This is a mile and a quarter, the Oaks. So nice way to end the card. Oh, and I haven't even mentioned, what am I doing? Haven't mentioned Pizza Bianca. Graham Motion takes over, as you know. We talked about this with Graham. Christophe Clement leaving Pizza Bianca out there. And Bobby Flay transferring his homebred Fastnet Rock Philly into the hands of Graham. So there's the majority of the big action. The Mathis, just seven, led by Balnikov. Glatt also, that I'm a gambler he told you about. Remember when we talked to Mark? He told you about I'm a gambler. Makes the North American debut in here. Peter Miller with Handy Dandy, who's been okay, won the Let It Ride. D'Amato Agatino, stakes debut for this three-year-old. Mandela's got Sumter for the Basses. Homebred of theirs, a Warfront colt, was third in the Stormy Liberal, so stretching out in here. And Time to Party for Papa Padromo, for David Burnson. One More Bid, Ryan Hansen. And Ramon Vasquez, recent maiden breaker, but who's... looks like it's a Cal Chrome. It looks like he's on the improve, this horse. This looks like a horse that's going to be a nice four-year-old and a gelding, so he's going to be around. So that's the Mathis. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's always one of my favorite cards of the year to cap and play. The maiden races, of course, the San Antonio. You know, as we know, we're going to start the year. We're finishing the year and starting the year a little on the, you know, skimpy side, obviously, with the classic division, with the handicap division horses. You know that. So we're going to deal with what we got. Actually, Baffert, there's an interesting Baffert Hopkins, but we kind of forgot about. Hopkins is me. You know, broke the maiden in October. The four-year-old was a debuted really well, but... then was hurt and was off for 9 or 10 months. Stiletto Boy, Breakfast Ride for Sadler, for the Eggerts, homebred of theirs. Hudson Ridge for Baffert, Sadler for Aronis, Haywood's Beach, and then the likely and overwhelming favorite, Country Grammar. So there's your highlights of the always fabulous opening day card, Boxing Day at Santa Anita. Exciting. Always exciting. You know what else is exciting? Sean and Joe Clancy, they're exciting. We're going to get Joe. I guess Sean is I wonder if he. I better check with Joe. I wonder if Sean is objecting to being called the Wee Clancy. I think maybe he might be he right. Maybe this is a standoff. We'll see. We'll see what Joe says. I don't want to. I'm not eager to get lost in the weeds on the latest overnight HISA spending bill loggerheads, but there are a few things. Daryl Vienna, you know what? I should really retweet that. Daryl Vienna wrote an extensive reply, essentially, to representing HBPA, kind of, you know, a point-by-point response to Charlie Sheeler's letter in TDN, and that's well worth a read. And I you know, a minute-by-minute breakdown of everything that's going back and forth, not necessarily the, you know, the way we want to end the year, to be honest. But we will keep tabs, see what happens between now. Tomorrow, I mean, we're going to do plenty of handicapping tomorrow in advance of Monday, because you really need a roadmap, frankly, for everything that's going on. There's actually Christmas Eve. There are a couple of stakes at Gulfstream. The Abundancia and the Janus, and then the Tropical Park Oaks and the Derby, which at one time or another has been alternately run at the beginning of the year over the years, whether at Gulfstream or at Calder, and that'll be on Monday. You've got the Mammoth card at Fairgrounds, and hope to get Mark. In fact, I know we're going to get Marcus because I made arrangements last week. But you got the huge stake card Monday at Fairgrounds with the Sugar Bowl, the Blushing KD, the Letelier, the Richie Shearer Memorial. Always thinking of Richie. The Buddy DiLiberto Memorial, and then the Gunrunner and the Untappable. So, and also the Tenacious. I mean, you got a big stake card, and they got some very nice fields. It's a terrific card Monday at Fairgrounds, even without much turf. They are running the DiLiberto is scheduled for the grass, as is the Blushing KD. So they got two turf stakes on Monday. And there's also the card at in fact, maybe Joe even brings it up a little bit. There is the Christmastide stakes card Monday at Laurel, $600,000 stakes that you can look forward to as well. Things like the Heft and the Gin Talking, the Willa on the Move, the Dave's Friend, the Carousel, and the Bob Manfuso as well. So, and there's also on Tuesday, we'll be gone, but there is the two-year-old Pennsylvania races at Parks. You're looking at the juvenile and the Futurity. Juvenile includes, I have to mention, the first start under the new ownership of Beck is in the juvenile, goes as the ninth, and the Futurity for the girls goes as the 10th. Nice 10 and 12 horse fields, actually. Very nice on Tuesday at Ben Salem. All right, let's get to Joe Clancy, who's probably now sitting by the fire, if I had to guess. And actually, I did promise Casey and I were discussing. Casey, you know what? This might be a good place while I reach for Joe. Why don't we slip in a little bit of our Christmas music as promised? Because we're going to give you the full compliment today and tomorrow. And I will bring. There we go. There we go. Oh, I see what happened. All right. Yeah.
But I'll be thinking about you, and I hope you'll think of me. I know you look so lovely standing beneath the mistletoe. Oh, I know you look lovely standing beneath the mistletoe.
Little Milton, Out of This World. Lonesome Christmas. Little Milton, who is highly underappreciated and one of my absolute favorites. And we used to play, Casey, what did we play of his? Grits and Groceries, right? I think is one of Little Milton's. And Joe Clancy joins us, and speaking of underrated, Joe Clancy. Although you're a multi award winning everything, so you're not underrated.
I think we're all underrated. Come on.
What's your favorite Christmas song?
This is not my favorite, but it's one I heard the other day that you'll have to, I didn't hear Little Milton there, but Merry Christmas from the Family by Robert Earl Keen will make your listeners laugh, put it that way.
Ooh, we love that.
Favorite Christmas song, I'm probably more of a modern Christmas, not that modern, but, you know, I love the music star takes on Christmas songs, you know, John Lennon, Happy Christmas, you know, those kinds of things, I think are anybody's version of Joy to the World. That's a little different, that we all sang those things as kids. But I think the what's the Natalie Merchant song, Children Go Where I Send Thee, I mean, those kinds of things. I love those songs. I just think they're those takes on some of those songs are really cool.
Well, I completely agree. And I mean, covers, we've had more difficulty playing our music that has always been a big part of the show. It's gotten harder because when you put up the podcast versions, you know, you load them up and the technology kicks out, you know, it because of copywriting. I mean, it's fine when we're playing on the network because the network, you know, SiriusXM has got, you know, the whatever the, what do you call it, the royalty agreements in place. But it when it comes to loading up the podcast, a lot of times they'll kick out anything, you know, any copyrighted material. So that's what, for people that have wondered why we don't get to play as much music as we used to, that's the reason. But covers have always been a big part of our choices. And so on that front, I completely agree. And in fact, for those that didn't see it on Facebook or Twitter, I guess I did it on Tuesday, I loaded 40 of our Christmas songs onto Spotify. And so it's listed as the official ATR Xmas hit list. So you can play it at home, 40 of our favorites, and there's a lot of those kinds of covers included.
I love it. Yeah, you're also talking to the goofball who does an annual cool songs playlist for his family, and this will be the 13th or 14th year, I think. I used to actually burn CDs. Now, they're not Christmas songs. It's just the song has to be released in the year we're talking about. So I've been workshopping the 2022 list for the last week or so.
Oh, well, then you will find in your email the master list that I've compiled over 15 years of our Christmas music, and you will
love it.
Yeah, you will be absolutely delighted. There's things. In fact, Jay Privman, and I don't blame Jay for this. Jay looked at it, and he's long listened, and he said, you know, it's egregious that you're not including the Pogues, Fairy Tale of New York, and the only reason I didn't is because our approach has always been to try to find more obscure Christmas music that people don't know, and to me, you know, everybody at this point knows Fairy Tale of New York. And I would put The Waitress's Christmas Wrapping, I would put the, you know, that in that same list. I mean, it's just too well known at this point.
Oh yeah. And again, it was obscure at one point, but it's not anymore.
No. Well, the one that we've brought forward, and I wrote this, it occurred to me this morning that I should have answered Jay, and a couple other people responded to Jay's point. The one that is deserving, and I enjoy, you know, sort of those mournful, in fact, I even called it mournful Christmas songs, the soul takes on Christmas music. But Tom Waits, Christmas Card from a Hooker in Minneapolis, and it which is just fabulous, and even has a racetrack reference.
Wow. No, anything he does to me is it adds another level of that to it, doesn't it? Very cool. Those are the kind of songs that show up. There's a radio station in Philadelphia, public radio station, WXPN, and the guy, one DJ, does, this is his 30th year, where he does 24 hours nonstop of Christmas music, and it's just him in the studio doing it. And since it's his 30th year, he's actually taken it up to 30 hours this year. So that's when he pulls out stuff like that from wherever. Like it's a challenge to come up with stuff. And I heard an interview with him where he's going, I'm trying to find stuff nobody's ever heard, you know, the depths of things is pretty funny when you tune in or tune out. And by the end, he's running on fumes, as you could probably guess. And he says he doesn't really have a playlist. He kind of just picks and chooses as he goes. And obviously he has enough music to pick from. I know they stream it, xpn.org, and it's University of Pennsylvania's public radio station. And Robert Drake is the guy's name, and he calls it The Night Before, and he basically does 24 hours. This year he starts tomorrow, usually starts on Christmas Eve, but he starts tomorrow.
Well, then I will at least give you a piece of this. Do you know this?
I'm sure it'll be familiar Yeah.
We'll listen to the first stanza because the racetrack reference comes early. Goes on from there. It's just so sweet and mournful. I mean, the line is, "Hey Charlie, I'm pregnant and living on 9th Street, right above a dirty bookstore off Euclid Avenue. and I stop taking dope and I quit drinking whiskey. My old man plays the trombone and works out at the track. And obviously the track being Canterbury, and it goes from there. If you're not familiar, Christmas card really from cool. a hooker in Minneapolis. I venture to say you won't hear that Saturday on the other horse racing talk shows. Joe Clancy with us for the big year end. And Joe, I suppose, are all the calendars addressed and sent out to recipients? Is there time for people to order any more calendars?
We still have a few left. Anything that's been ordered through yesterday has shipped, thanks to the crack team at the office, which is me and young Chappy Motion from Scram Motion fame, who has been stuffing envelopes as fast as we can sell calendars. But I don't think you're going to get it by Christmas, but you'll get it by the end of the year if you order now. So, yeah, they're still on there. We'll get orders processed and shipped back out as fast as we can.
Well, and this is horseracing.com for the absolutely fabulous. I'm still waiting for this year's. Last year, you guys sent me one. I thought as a gracious Christmas gift, and I'm watching the mailbox.
We haven't gotten to those yet. We haven't gotten to the gift ones yet.
Oh, okay. That comes from the remainder pile.
Correct. And it's a New Year's gift, not a Christmas gift, you know.
Oh, all right. There we go. All right. I get it.
The calendar you have has January 23 in it, just in case.
Ooh, we love that.
It'll get you over the hump.
The old 13-month calendar, and then there came that period. You know, the calendars years ago, they used to show up like in, you know, like October, November, and there'd be the rack of, and then all of a sudden they started showing up in August, and they started selling 16-month calendars that started in September. So if you got tired of your existing calendar, you could make an early switch over. That was an interesting calendar marketing gimmick.
Yeah, and we still get some we get some anxious people looking for it sooner and sooner every year. And I'm like, look, the point is to get the right horses in, and we'll get it to you by the end of the year. You don't want the calendar we might make in August. Like, who would want you'd miss half the story. So we're always a little late and sweating some printer details and then sweating the shipping and everything else. But I had an interesting email from a customer in New Jersey whose tracking information showed that her calendar was in Seattle. And I'm like, oh, good. I'm glad it went from Maryland to Seattle to get to New Jersey. But, you know, I sent her another one.
Well, that's kind of kooky. There were certain, it's, you know, that's funny. There's certain mail flow routes that are miraculous, literally miraculous. When I was at Colgate, my father, if my father got something in the mail before noon, it would get to me the next day. It was the craziest thing. And it was because it just so happened that Hartford to Albany to Buffalo, the flow was such that it literally was on a truck within hours and got to, you know, to Syracuse, I guess, or Utica, and would get to Hamilton. It was the craziest thing. Usually it involved me asking for money.
Of course.
Pop,
hey.
Can you? So, you know, you'd be checking, you'd go check your mailbox in the student union, you know, like every 4 hours as if somehow it was good. But that was one that was amazing to me, that literally 24 hours later.
Yeah,
made me
no,
think of
it's,
that.
It is a little nuts. We've learned a lot over the years in different ways to try to do it, or what works better. Everything goes down to the Elkton post office that our mailman usually picks up, or UPS, depending on how we send them. But for a while, we would try to take them to a bigger post office, and then somebody said, no, keep sending them to the little post office, because their goal at the end of the night is to have everything out of there. Where the big post office, they got plenty of places to put them, you know. So they're like, you know, like, and they might sit in an extra day at the big post office. So I'm like, good. There you go. Good thinking. So,
well, the Christmas,
it's a little bit of a mystery.
The great that makes me think of the great postal service moment in Miracle on 34th Street. In fact, I got to check with Andy. I I tried to get Andy to commit to seeing Miracle on 34th Street, which he says he has never seen, which seems ridiculous and impossible. But now with Andy, it's not. But he hinted that he might, I might have cajoled him to watch it. But Tina and I watched it the other night. We were sitting, and she said, this must have been Tuesday night. And she said, what do you want to watch? And she said, I want to watch a Christmas movie. And so she was thumbing through them. And I said, Miracle on 34th Street? She said, I was hoping you'd say that.
Oh, there you go.
It was so sweet. And so, boom, and there it is. And the real one, with Natalie Wood. The new one, no thank you. But there is that great scene when they go to the bowels of the post office. And of course, that post office that they're showing you is the post office that's become the Daniel Patrick Moynihan train station now in Manhattan behind Madison Square Garden. And there's that scene. And, you know, for those that don't realize it, for those of you that know about Chico and the Man or Willy Wonka, the original, Frank Albertson has got a bit part in Miracle on 34th Street as the guy that's sorting mail. And he's the one who suggests he gets the letter to Kris Kringle that says, you know, county courthouse. And he's the one that inspires the New York Postal Service to deliver all the Santa letters to the courthouse and getting Kris Kringle released. The Miracle on 34th Street.
Love it. No, those are classics, right? I mean, I don't think I've been to that depths of the post office, but I have seen some. When you're back there, when I drop off, usually they pick them up. If I drop off it's a big tub of calendars, and when you see back there, it's a wonder any letters get anywhere. but somehow it works.
The calendars. And there is still time, by the way, for those of you that do want the Kentucky Downs calendar that we offered. All you got to do, send a picture to Hammer at a sporting event or a concert, and Kentucky Downs calendar at yahoo.com or KY Downs calendar at yahoo.com, and we will get you a calendar. For those that don't want to shell out the $29.95, or you can do both. You can get both. But the post office scene with Tommy Lee Jones in Men in Black. When he's
oh yeah, the aliens are under the bed.
Well, the whole idea that aliens are postal workers is itself a hysterical
genius.
Yes, right, yeah. Steve, Sonderberg, touch of it's a great sight gag. Too funny. Joe Clancy with us for the big season-ending visit that hasn't had anything to do with horse racing other than a reference to Canterbury. First of all, I got to ask you, because I haven't heard back from the wee Clancy. What's up with the wee Clancy?
He's shopping. Come on. He's out looking for the perfect gift for his big brother. That must be it, right?
That's a great question. What does he come across for Christmas presents?
He's good. He's usually he's a big book guy, but he hunts down a signed copy of books and those kinds of things.
So, ooh,
yeah, and or something obscure that you're like, oh yeah, that kind of stuff. So
that's very. What do you get him?
Yeah. It's usually something similar. It's changed a little now that all our kids are older. It's more like, okay, I'm spending more money on the kid than I have you. So it changes.
Yeah, that's true. That'll happen. Same thing with us. We got the grandchildren to buy for. Well, Joe, we got a few minutes, and get your year-end thoughts. And, we're most of us that are Eclipse voters, we've got some decisions to make, some highlights and I suppose lowlights. What What does the 2022 year in review look like for Joe Clancy?
I was trying to think of that before when we were texting about coming on. I was literally walking a dog in the woods, and I was trying to roll through some of the things from the year, or I was trying to narrow it down to races I saw or something like that, or moments I saw. And obviously, a lot of it is Saratoga-centered, and you know, the performances I was lucky enough to kind of be covering or be involved in were the ones that jumped out at me. I mean, I thought Epicenter went into Travers when, you know, like he just, it was all the talk was he couldn't win a grade one or didn't win a grade one, you know, and to deliver when he did, you know, and you could tell how much it meant to Steve Asmussen and stuff. But that was cool. John Velasquez getting his 1,000th Saratoga win.
Oh, yeah.
Possible, you know? You're like, yeah. Well, you know, yeah, it makes you back up and think a minute, you know? And, I was lucky enough to kind of cover Malathot a couple times. Like, I was covering the race where she got beat, and I remember thinking before the race that she just seemed really dull and listless in the paddock. And she finished second, and, you know, you cover the winner, Clairiere, and then you kind of go talk to Todd about her, and you know, those were the first words out of his mouth, and you're like, oh, I thought, you know, it was interesting to hear him say it because I thought the same thing. And then to have them kind of go back to the drawing board and have her run as well as she did the next time, you know, and then finish it off the way she did at the end of the year, they're not horses you have anything to do with, but you're still proud of them in a way, you know, when they step up and do stuff like that.
Sure.
I think it's pretty cool. And Nest, obviously, her performances at Saratoga were just, you know, take your breath away a little bit, you know. And then we didn't cover, but right at the end of the meet when Phil Serpy won the Grade One, that was, he's always been a big fan of the paper, and to have him finish off Saratoga with a win like that was really cool, you know. Leave No Trace, and then she finished off her year pretty well too, you know.
Yes, she did.
And he's got a nice horse, you know, going into 23, so I'm sure you do a little bit, but you still gotta cover the race. But I love it when it's, you know, when it's a story like that, you can tell when it's whether it's an underdog or whatever you want to call it, you know, just some of the horses that step up and still prove that, you know, a good horse can come from almost anywhere or be in anybody's barn. I think that was a big theme this year, which we saw in the Derby and we saw in some of the other races, which, you know, I'd covered Caravelle from the beginning when Lizzie Merriman had her, and she was winning little stakes at Presque Isle and stuff like that. And to see her, you know, 3 years later or so, win a Breeders' Cup race, you know, again, really cool to see.
Those are all good. Go back to the three-year-olds for a minute. I don't know if you want to, how much of a reveal I'm asking for, but where do you stand on the three-year-olds?
I think, and again, I haven't done anything. I was just thinking this, and I'm like, I have my mail past performances came the other day, and I think it's still sitting on my desk unopened. So I have not really looked at them like that, but I think I would lean toward Epicenter. You know, I know he didn't do what he did, you know, he didn't got hurt in the Breeders' Cup, but to me, he had the best sort of most consistent performances all year. I try to have a fairly clean mind when I open that voters past performance thing they send us and try to make decisions as you're looking at it. And I mark it all up, and then I've got notes on top of notes, and it's never easy. You know, some years there's automatics or really simple ones to do, but there's still stuff you struggle with.
Yeah, I have the one, yeah, the one area certainly that I think people are really curious about. Just plus, it's a glamour division.
Yeah. No, for sure, but again, you have years like this sometimes, you know. It's just, this is the way it turns out, where you have some questions, or you just have some things that aren't quite as clear cut as you might want them to be. But it's the same as watching races or trying to handicap races. It's never It's rarely automatic, put it that way. Doesn't take anything away from the various performances by horses who might not win. You know, Rich Strike to me proved his quality. I mean, he stayed, you know, he won the Derby in a huge upset, but then he stayed at the top of the division, you know, and ran different places and took him everywhere. And he wasn't disgraced either. You know, so fun group of horses.
I'm just looking too at the, there really are not that many tough decisions. Although, you know, you mentioned Caravelle. You do.
Oh, like female sprinter? Yeah, I guess.
What are we doing?
Goodnight Olive, I guess, right?
It's two races. It's hard.
You have yours in front of you, so you're opening them up. So
yeah.
I think mine are at the office, and I'm at home. So
all right.
I'm like, they didn't email these, I think that's going to be a little bit of a Caravelle would certainly.
Yeah, she's going to get votes.
She's going to get some votes. Yeah,
yeah, big time, big time votes.
No, and it's funny how they. I mean, they always make the deal about the finalists. You know, but then you realize afterwards that the first place votes are what gets the horse the award. You know what I mean? So it gets a little different sometimes. But she's going to get votes, yeah.
Well, because for those
she won five stakes, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and nice stakes. I mean, she won the Intercontinental and the Smart and Fancy. She won the Franklin and the Turf Sprint, obviously, and even started the year with a synthetic win as well. She didn't run, you know, I tell you what might have made a big difference, actually. The Breeders' Cup carries so much weight with voters. If she could have run better in the Presque Isle Masters.
Another graded win would have made a difference.
Yeah.
Would have really helped, yeah.
So, but she's going to be right there. And I suppose you know who's a forgotten entity in here and should really get an update from Brad Cox. Matt Araya, who has not been seen since the test, of course, and had won the Acorn and the Eight Bells and the Beaumont. I mean, she was ticketed for a period, right? I mean, to be involved, so... And then, I'll tell you the other category, Joe, that we should at least touch on is the turf. I've heard all kinds of interesting ideas about what people are going to do when it comes to the male turf horse.
Yeah, because you've got the you're going to have the impact of those sort of the foreign based horses that came here. And even ran more than once. You know, I'm usually not a horse who comes and wins once type of voter, but the horses that do it repeatedly become, you know, one you pay a little more attention to. Because
Modern Games and Rebel's Romance and Nation's Pride are Modern Games is problematic because, of course, you know, the performance at Woodbine, got that smashing Woodbine win, and not that necessarily, you know, I mean, it's across the border.
North America.
Yeah, you know, Nation's Pride ran in the New York Triple, you know, second in that Belmont Derby, and then the wins at Saratoga and the Jockey Club Derby before, a very modest try in the turf. Rebel's Romance was awfully impressive, without a doubt, and winning the turf. So I'm also not, you know, typically a guy that gravitates. You know, Casa Creed has got the two Grade One wins in the Jiper and the Four Star Dave, and then there's the problematic his absolute disdain for Keeneland. I mean. It's unbelievable. I mean, he's literally run poorly three times in his career, all three times at Keeneland. It's pretty obvious.
Got something against the place.
Well, it's the sand base. It's that sand base.
Yeah, maybe.
Turf course. Yeah. It's just, it's not a course that, you know, that is to his liking. And that's, you know, that's a reality. The turf horses, the footing is always the key to them. After that, I don't know. Annapolis is probably going to get a couple of votes. I mean, he was dreadful. You know, after the
and then there's probably four or five deserving female turf champions that, you know, that you're going to have to deny one of them. You know, in another year they would have won it. You know, when I mean, like Warlike Goddess beat the males and then ran really well against them too. You know,
well, she's going to get plenty of votes. I mean, I
vote for her in the male division, which is where she like she actually ran very well against them.
Yeah. No, she beat, no doubt, winning the Joe Hirsch, and that really is a nice campaign. She won the Bewitch, she won the Glens Falls, got beat a neck in the arriving late in the Flower Bowl. She wins the Joe Hirsch, and then you know was a solid
she's rallying. She's the best American, you know, in the turf, you know, in the Breeders' Cup turf. Well, regardless, you know. So.
Then there's Regal Glory, who finished strong with that Matriarch romp.
In Italian,
are the three. I think that's pretty clear. I mean, I suppose Caravelle. Do you vote for her as a turf filly, or do you vote mare, or do you vote for her as a sprinter, or both? There's people that have that approach. So there's plenty of intrigue.
Yeah, I mean there's gonna be between Bleecker Street and Italian, Regal Glory, Warlike Goddess, like there's gonna be three of them who don't win an Eclipse Award who might have won it in another year.
Right. Well, all right. Joe, some warm holiday wishes and New Year's expressions for everybody.
Yeah, same to you. I am not going. I kind of wish I was, but the card at Laurel on the day after Christmas looks like fun. You know, and I think it's kind of it's neat that they throw stuff like that together and give sort of one last big finish to the season.
Agreed. It's a nice, and they got some nice. Fields for it as well. Well, best wishes, Joe, to you and your clan, and of course, thanks to you and Tom and Sean for a fabulous full year of thisishorseracing.com/Saratoga Special Conversations. Been a wonderful addition to the weekly regular lineup.
Oh, thanks for having us. We look forward to it.
Joe Clancy, everybody. Joe Clancy 65 on your Twitter. 65 or 67? 65.
65. I wish it was 67. No, 65. Sorry.
That's pretty good. Joe, thank you. We'll talk after the start of the new year.
Sounds great.
Joe Clancy, everybody, and the terrific team. We've got two things to do coming up, and that includes Tony Black. I want to get to Tony. I've been sort of holding back the Mahoning Valley story, and we'll hopefully do that with Tony. And actually, I'm going to give Tony a minute to get back to me regarding that. And I heard from Dick Powell this morning early. Dick was disappointed that he did not among his grievances, one thing he would have liked to have done is to pay tribute to Ray Kerrison. And if you hadn't seen the news, and I guess you have to be a certain age, really, because Kerrison has been out of the New York Post, retired about 10 years ago. But Ray Kerrison passed at 92. And for, you know, those of us of a certain age, Ray Kerrison, one of the turf writers slash handicappers that was really sought out and, you know, for many, I think a bit of a North Star for handicapping purposes and insight. So I know that Dick wanted to come back and talk a little bit about Ray Kerrison. Happy to do that with him. So we'll head, Case, let's head to the break. And then we'll follow up with Tony on the back end as well. We'll do that. I do want to give you a couple of things. I haven't talked yet about yesterday. Nice job for Seth. Didn't get a chance to mention the Tampa results, and Seth, you know, was very chalky. And I suppose if you ended up leaning heavily on, you know, that first leg, if you singled Practicality, who was 2-5, you could have actually made this pay all right. It paid like 55, I think it paid $55. But if you had singled in that first leg, Seth was a little, I guess, a little nervous about, you know, the potential for an upset in that maiden sprint. But you could have cut it down to like, you know, $9 for 50 cents. And it paid, what did it pay? Here we go, I'll tell you. Paid $51.65 for every 50 cents. So if you kind of drilled down a little bit, I mean, even at $36, you still made something. But there was, you know, when you saw that horse get bet like that, to 2-5, maybe you singled there and used the other 3x3x2 that Seth recommended. So that for $18, you would have gotten back $102. And boy, last night at Turfway, you did have some early fireworks. You had a 20-1 winner, Terry Young, horse that he owns and trains, came from downtown, ready at midnight with Santo Sanger. Paid $44.38. The pick five yesterday, because there were a couple of other. There was a $30 horse as well that you would have seen, the familiar Van Berg, purple and gold. King's Legacy paid $30.84 to finish up the early, you know, the only pick five. $27,677. And the pool was $174,000. So you're looking at probably six winners, five winners, about $100,000. Probably five winners of $27,000. That's a nice Christmas bonus. Wesley Ward, Vaccine of Hope, in that nice allowance. That was a good card. Tonight again, they're going to be, they're canceling, they've already canceled Friday, FYI, if you missed that. But tonight again, 10 by 11 by 12 by 12 by 12 by 11 by 12 by 12. Yeah.